Firstly, thank you so much for inviting me to be here this morning. I consider it a real honour and a privilege. And don't take it for granted either, in that churches always have so much that they're involved with and so much they're responsible for. And there's also always so much going on. So I recognise and thank you for the opportunity and for the time of being able to be here. It's a few years since I've been here. I actually can't remember, but I know it's since I've been... I'm in my fourth year as chaplain here at the school now, so it's been in the last 3 years that I have been here. And let me tell you, when we have a... this is where we hold our assemblies, because it's the only room in the school big enough. By the time you get all your teachers and other staff down here and all the kids, there's not very much floor space left, I can tell you. That's accurate, isn't it, Alon? And it gets pretty noisy too when they're all talking at once. It would be, firstly, a little bit of introduction. I know some of you know me because there's people here that I know, and I've been here before. I don't want to bore those that have been here before, but obviously my name's Peter. My nickname in the club is Bubba, and I've got no idea why. I'm still trying to work out why they call me Bubba. I have no idea. I don't think it's anything to do with my size at all. I'm not sure. I'm married to Ruth, who was a chaplain for 3 years and is now a field support manager, looks after something like 70 schools and about 52 chaplains. So she's the field support manager, so her and I work for the same organisation. She was in three different primary schools when she was a chaplain. She's a primary school teacher. We'll be married 25 years next year, or 24 years this year, and I'll be 50 next year, so been married half my life by the time we get through to next year. I have two adult children. We have two adult children, Annalise, who is 23, and a son who is about, who'll be turning 21 in May. And he's inherited some genes of mine. Size isn't one of them, but a love for motorcycles. A love for motorcycles and for people, which also comes from Ruth. And our daughter works in childcare, just loves kids. And will maybe go to university later this year to study sociology. She just, she has that sort of feel. Both children still live with us. We live in Lilydale. We go to Lilydale Vineyard. I think we're now... I was trying to think, I just lose track. It's either 6 years or 8 years that we've been going to Lilydale Vineyard. We've been in Melbourne 10 years and we were going to another church that closed and we moved straight across to Vineyard. So we've been going there about 8 years, I think. I can't really remember. Annalise lives in a flat down the back of the house that we rent, and Dylan just has a room inside the house that we rent. So it's good to have them both around, although come the end of the month when money's running thin, mum and dad are a bit like a bank account, but still... I'd rather have them at home and have that than have lost touch with them. I'll just go through a little bit about what I do, and then I've got probably some words of encouragement. I'm not really a preacher or a teacher. I'm studying as well as working and involved with Squad. I'm also doing my degree in theology, or just through Tabor. It's just something that I thought that I really had a responsibility to do in light of the fact that in both my work here at the school, involved with God's Squad, and Ruth and I don't know how it's happened. I think it's just because we've grown up in an environment, we're involved with people, I suppose in some sense people that are involved with people, you pay a bit of a price because your whole life just seems to revolve around that. And it's actually been, I think we had a month where we weren't at Vineyard because of stuff to do with the fires, holding memorial services, being involved in helping and working with people. And then last week Ruth and I actually ran away and just had a night and a day away just to keep a little bit of sanity. The last time we tried to do that was on Black Saturday, and the phone started ringing at a pub. We were staying at a hotel in Mount Waverley just to get away, and the phone started ringing at 7 o'clock that morning. That after that, we were home, but I'd organised a late checkout for the afternoon, and come about 5:30 that afternoon, Ruth was still on the phone because a lot of her chaplains worked in fire affected areas. And so it's just been, for those of you that have been either affected directly or indirectly, it's just been huge. And then there's all the usual things that go on in life as well. I've had family affected by fires. I've been travelled to Yackandandah, which is my hometown, to speak at a memorial Thanksgiving service up there a few weeks ago. The guy that was my Sunday school teacher when I was growing up, that's how long ago it was. Sunday schools, you don't hear much about anymore. We do stuff just a little bit differently. He asked me if I'd go up there and speak, so a bunch of us travelled up there to speak at the memorial service, which went really well. And there's just ongoing stuff And then I was at Longwarri yesterday, with Gareth and some other brothers from squad, and I got a phone call to say a good friend of my son's, age 21, had just died. He had a rare form of stomach cancer. And last time anyone saw him, we haven't seen him for a while. Last time we saw him was at Peter Mac Hospital, and then we got a phone call yesterday and just to say that he died. And I have to admit to feeling a little frustration because recently, and any of you that are, I'm on Facebook, but you know, we gloat and jump up and down how wonderful state we are at sport. And I get very frustrated when we can't find $60,000 to send a kid to America to get treatment that might have helped him, but we can pay $2.5 million for a golfer to come out here and, you know, hit golf balls, all of which is really important. And he's a great golfer, and I love sport. I'm a finely tuned athlete. well, that's what I dream about. I'm sure there's several athletes in here just waiting to get out. You know, distance running, swimming, high jumping, golfing. And I have to admit, I just get a bit frustrated at our priorities in this world. That, you know, we can do that, but we can't help a kid or can't help someone that might need. And I know there's lots of those cases, and people say there's not enough money to go around. But so I'm feeling a bit both emotional and a bit frustrated, I have to say. The other thing I wanted to say is, over the course of the last 12 months in my role as chaplain at the school, I've sent emails out asking for some help in particular case for two. One was a family who lost their house by fire just before Christmas, who come to this school, and they lost everything except what they had on their back. And I felt the need to be able to help on a practical level, which you can't always do. And then there was a girl at this school who's in her senior years, whose mother took her life about 2 years ago. You lose track. I think it was about 2 years ago. I was away with the Year 10s in Queensland when I found out when the funeral would be, and obviously I couldn't get back, and I was disappointed about that. But this girl had an older sister who she'd lived with for a while, but she was a party animal and it didn't work out, so she's connected up with an agency and they found her housing, and she's got two younger siblings who have a different father, and they've gone to live with their dad and her new, and his new partner. And she could really be helped by getting a computer. Now, money just doesn't drop out of the air, but I just want to say thank you to you as a church, you as a congregation, you as a movement, whatever you want to call yourselves, for your practical support in the way of finances to help both those that girl and that family. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it is huge. And so whether you like it or not, you're directly part of chaplaincy, not just by the fact that you have members of your congregation that may teach here or go to school here, or the fact that you use these facilities, or that you live in Berwick or in the surrounding areas, but you're connected because you've helped out a family of three children and a father and a girl who, you know, if anyone has a need to be angry at the world, it'd be her, and she's not. And I just said to her teachers, what would really help her at this time? And they said, look, a computer would be fantastic because she's so far behind with her homework. And so you as a congregation have been able to help out, and that's that is just fantastic. And so whether you like it or not, you are now linked into chaplaincy here at the school, and you can't get out of it. So thank you. And also thank you for your ongoing financial support. I stay out of all that sort of stuff. It doesn't bother me, because quite frankly, if the money dried up tomorrow, as much as I could, I'd still come in. Now, I know there's complications with that, and I know that people say that, but I've worked for Christian organisations for a long time. I think 2.5 years I went without pay one time when Ruth and I were first married, and it's just what I'm prepared to do. It's just how it is. And God always looks after us. So there we go. There's a bit of a long introduction and just a bit about how I'm feeling now to do what I'm to do. Just want to give you an overview. I was talking to the principal of the school the other day, and I said to him, did you realise that Berwick Secondary College is probably, by the time you take the students and the students' family and the teachers and their families and the other staff and their families, we are bigger than most rural communities in Victoria. And by an estimation of me just working it out roughly, by the time you take all that into consideration, Berwick Secondary College has a community of about 4,500 people plus. And so when you think of it like that, and the principal said, Ross said, I've never thought of it like that. And let me tell you, when you're sitting in your office and you're part of a welfare team and you see what all the teachers and the other staff do as well, it'd be easy for it to be overwhelming. So this school has about 1,650 students. It's fluctuating. I was in the office the other day. The ladies were taking calls from all over the state as well as New Zealand, people saying, where do we have to live in yours, in Berwick or in the area if we want our kids to come to this school, because it is a zoned school. There are other ways to get in, but it's not always easy. So I think we're about 1,650 students. That changes. People come, people go. So it's a big school. We're mainly white Anglo-Saxon. I think we've just overtaken the Gold Coast as the fastest growing area in Australia. We have more people dependent on healthcare cards than anywhere else in Victoria. And the young people of the area of Casey would fill the MCG. So that gives you an idea of our demographic, I suppose, and just a, you know, to help you get the picture. We're living in a world that is constantly changing, and I don't know if any of you have read Hugh Mackay's latest book called Advance Australia Where, and I like Hugh because his method of collecting information, the way he puts it together, is really good. We're living in 40% of marriages in Australia now end in divorce, roughly. 66% of all marriages are first marriages, the rest are second or more. That compares to about 30 years ago, about 90% of marriages were first marriages. So the landscape's changing, things are changing. 27% of the workforce in Australia is casual, which is a big shift. When I was growing up, casual work was for the lazy people. Now, you know, if you work for 3 hours a week, you're no longer unemployed. Apparently you've got employment. I don't know how you're supposed to live on that, but that's fantastic. And then there's another book out that I've just started to read by the Christian Research Association, that Dr. Philip Hughes heads up. And they mainly work with young people. One of the things they did was they, on a scale of 1, which is the lowest, and 10, which is the highest, they interviewed a number of secondary school age young people. And the most of them, on the scale of where they're content or happy with life, and I think they use the word content rather than happy, because happiness can change from one minute to the next. They talked about being content with life. Most young people in Australia scored between 8 and 10, which is pretty good. 40% said, yeah, kind of, and about 10% said they're not satisfied with life at all. And I find those figures pretty well reflect. Here in a school, there's just kids I'll never see, just because everything goes okay for them. There are other kids who just need some encouragement to see that things aren't as bad as what they need, and then there's a percentage of kids for whom life is pretty rough. And they're the ones that I usually end up seeing. Part of the frustration, of course, is I sometimes get to work with boys in particular who this might be their second or third school they've been at because they've been kicked out of the other two. And to be honest with you, that's the part that I find difficult, because I need to go in and advocate on their behalf. And where you've got a school with so many students and where the school is affected by kids that don't perform well, you understand that there's a conflict of interest that just is put on the school by the department. There's nothing we can do about it. So I have to say I find that a little frustrating. But it's those kids that my heart is really for. And I suppose part of it is what I try to do with them is, and I think it's what Jesus calls us to do. I was just reading through Matthew 5 the other day because I had to speak to a bunch of year 10 girls on soul and mind. And I thought I'd use the Beatitudes just to talk about how that life is not about seeking what we want, but it's about seeking something different. It's about living differently. And Jesus calls us to live differently. And before, in the prophecy time, or whatever you call it, that's what they call it, vineyard up in Berwick, up in Lilydale, it was really interesting that you talked about the stuff that you talked about. And in Matthew 5, just after it talks about the Beatitudes, and I'll read them in a minute, it goes on to say that we are salt and light. And we don't have a choice in it. Salt doesn't have any choice but to be salt, and light doesn't have any choice but to be light. And that's what I try to be in the lives of the kids here at the school. I had one of the year 10 girls say to me the other day, whenever we see you around the school, you're always smiling. Now, I have to be honest, over the last month, there hasn't been a whole lot to smile about. There's been some absolutely tragic circumstances. We have friends that lost their two girls in a fire at Kinglake, a guy that used to ride with God Squad. Bodies charred beyond recognition. And despite what the media said about them being out looking after their horses, they were actually in a place that was considered a safe house by the CFA. But when a house is hungry for oxygen, and when a fire is hungry for oxygen, it doesn't mind where it gets it from. And if it's in a house, it'll get in a house. So I'm not terribly wrapped and jumping up and down with excitement about that sort of stuff. We've had friends in Kinglake who live in a place called Keith Street. One of them's house wasn't touched, and they're devastated because their best friends across the road lost everything. And so they're living with that tension. I've had sister that farms in northeast Victoria have lost all their summer grazing land, just burnt, because the CFA couldn't be there to protect it. But they're at their other farm where there's a big switchyard that provides power for Bendigo and Ballarat and places like that. So they were there to protect that. And so there's all these different stories. I was talking to a friend last night at an outlaw club, and he wants me to go and see the publican at Flowerdale because everybody's talking about Kinglake. Flowerdale's just been destroyed, as has Marysville. We have friends that have lost their business, lost their home. She's 16 weeks pregnant. Ruth and I did her wedding. He's a Cherokee Indian. She's an Aussie girl. And they were actually getting invited out for dinner, and they thought, oh, that's nice, we're being invited out for dinner. And then people would invite their friends around and ask them how it felt to watch their house and their business go up in flames. And they just walked out in disgust. So much so that they now live in Queensland and don't ever want to go back to Marysville again. So so if you talk about, you know, happiness and all that sort of stuff, there's not been really a lot to be happy about. But there's this great sense of contentment that comes from knowing God. And that's what I try and pass on and talk to these young people about that I have. Because happiness is one of those things that just comes and goes. And quite frankly, I don't think God cares whether we're happy or we're not happy, to be honest with you. I don't think he really cares. I think he cares in whether we're content, regardless of what's going on with us, regardless of what's happening. Because if we're living differently, as God calls us to in Matthew 5, if we are living differently, then we are going to get ourselves in trouble because we are living differently. People don't like different. People like us to fit in. People like us to be like them. And so to be different, to be something like salt that both preserves and brings out the flavour in things, people don't like. Because it means taking a stand. And if we're not fitted up with the armour of God, as our brother talked about, we just have it there and it's sitting in a box in the corner. It's not much good to us. But if it's on, we're ready for the fight, and it is a fight. The other thing I notice too is it's the people that will bring the fight up to you are the people you least expect it from. It's the nice people. The people who don't want to change things because it's nice. And if we start to change the niceness, then they get on the attack. It's usually the people at the bottom of the heap, if I can use that, who are just surprised that anybody will spend any time with them anyhow. And I'm constantly amazed at the people. And I'll tell you a story of my mate that didn't lose his house in Kinglake. He's a retired member of God Squad, a life member. There's a kid. Him and his wife have taken kids into their home, much to their own detriment, and they've struggled. They're a blended family, and they've struggled with some of the stuff going on with their own kids. And there was this kid who really, when he used to come to their home and do the stuff they did and steal from people and steal from them and do all this stuff, he really just wanted to give him a smack in the head. Now, that's just how he felt. Well, when the fires came through, this kid had a car that wasn't worth much, but he went and sold it and bought food and handed debt. That's living differently. That's different for him because he used to be a person that took from others. Why is it they can see it? And so often it's something that I know I struggle with, to be different. I look different. I kept being told that I don't look like a chaplain. I mean, I don't know what I look like. I just look like I look like. I've always looked like this, you know, fat and ugly. No, I haven't always. You know, people ask me, how do you get this image? It's not an image, it's who I am. But if about difference is appearances, I could go out tomorrow and change my appearance. You know, I could shave my beard off and try and grow my hair, which wouldn't be very successful. And I could go to a surfing shop and buy surfing gear if they make it big enough to fit me and walk around with a surfboard under my arm. It doesn't make me a surfer. It doesn't make me a surfer. You know, I could go and put a pair of overalls on and hang some tools out of my belt and pretend to be a plumber. And if you knew my plumbing skills, you'd certainly know, or my handyman skills, you'd certainly know that I'm a plumber. God's called us all to be different. And one of the things I like about chaplaincy is that chaplaincy isn't this thing you fit into, and this is what a chaplain has to do and not do. Don't get me wrong, there are things that we do need to do and things that we've got to be careful of. I'm not saying that. But the person that did chaplaincy before me and the person that will come after me will do it different. Because God's asked us to do life differently. He's asked us to be different. You are salt and you are light. And people don't get a light and go, look, I think I'll just put a big large tin over it so no one can see it. Because then a light renders useless because it's not doing what a light's supposed to do. And if salt doesn't do what it's supposed to do, it has no purpose. There is no purpose for it. It's just this white stuff that just sits there and you go, well, what do I do? Salt's supposed to do two things. It's supposed to help preserve. I know my father thinks that when you cut a piece of celery, you fill a little channel with salt because he likes salt. Now, that's not what salt was intended to do. Salt's to enhance something, to bring the flavour out. You know, guys, when you cook your barbecue, if you put salt on the steak before you cook it, all the juices come out and you ruin it. Now, if you like your steak well done and dried up and shriveled, you deserve it. But if you like it rare or blue like I do, the salt doesn't go on it till you've sealed it. And it helps bring the flavour out so that when you rest the steak, all the juices are coming to the surface and it's the best steak. And I'm a chef by trade. That's my background. I love food. Can't you tell? Light is designed to help you see in the dark. I mean, you put a torch on in here today, it's not going to be very helpful. But when it's dark, it's very helpful. My mother-in-law, who no longer drives, she's a Kiwi because my wife's a Kiwi, drove home from church one night, one of my wife's sisters followed her home because they were trying to convince her she needed to give up a licence at 82. And she followed her home from church one night and she said to her daughter, see, didn't I do a good job? And the daughter said, would have been great, Mum, if you just turned your headlights on. And she goes, oh, I didn't realise the street lights must be very bright. Not that it would make much difference if you knew my mother-in-law and saw how she drove. See, light has a job to do, and it doesn't know how to do anything else but to be light. Salt doesn't know how to be anything else but salt. And we are called to be light and salt. The other thing I want to say, so that's what I try and do here at the school, try to be light and salt. Am I successful at it? I don't know, I just do it. Do I do well all the time? No, there's days where I have my bad days and I'd just rather be somewhere else. I'm human. We work through those. But to be honest, I'd rather be home in bed. I've had a big weekend. I haven't had a day off last Sunday we had a bit of a day off, but then when we got home, the work started again because that's just how it goes. I'd rather be home in bed. But God's called us to be different. And we've got to be different, otherwise the world's just going to go on the same. I say to the kids, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you always got. If you don't change things, it's not going to change. It'll just keep being the same. The other thing that with chaplaincy, and I saw this, where's that brother Andrew that works with the ambulance? Is he here? Where are you? Well, I saw you on TV. I don't know whether you've seen, did you see me on TV? I was on ABC 7, 9, 10 and TV3 in New Zealand. I was on page 5 of the Sun Herald and I was somewhere in The Age. And the kids are still telling me about it. I'm going, no, it's boring, it's uninteresting. Why they take photos of me, I don't know. And we were in Sydney for our national run last year and a local magazine came and did an article on it. Guess whose picture got on the front cover. I don't know what it is. Now, of course, Andrew. I saw him up in King Lake. And there's other people that have been at the forefront of the fires, more so than me. But, you know, we're holding people's hearts in our hands. We need to be really careful. Since I said I was going to read it, I will read it. You notice before I said that I'm not a preacher or a teacher, I sort of am a thinking, feeling person. If I was to do one of those Meyer Briggs thingies, which I just hate doing, but if I was to do it, I think I'd be I don't know what the scales are, but I'd be a sort of a thinky, feely, touchy sort of a person. Don't get me wrong, I used to work as a bouncer in a pub. I've done a number of jobs, and if I needed to remove someone, I had methods and ways, but always within treating people with dignity and respect. And for 6 months I worked as a bouncer at a pub in the Southern Highlands of New South Wales, while at the same time teaching religious studies to year 7s and 10s of the local high school. And there was, like, it was really different, I can tell you. It was really different. But it's one thing that it taught me that I've always grew up knowing, and my parents taught me, by the people they took into their house who were different from us, alcoholics and people who had nothing, but they always gave them the best of what we had. It wasn't, well, they're alcoholics. Baked beans on toast will do. Now, don't get me wrong, baked beans on toast is okay. So if you want to have people around and it's baked beans on toast, I'm not saying that, but my mother used to make sure they'd have what we were having. They didn't go, well, look, they're dirty old men, and they were smelly and dirty. Mum used to cut their hair. She was a nurse, she used to look after them. And she, you know, if they needed a bath at our place, they'd have a bath at our place. And that's where we've learned it from. Doing things differently, because the world rejects those sorts of people often. And labels them. Don't we love giving people's labels, you know? When I was at the Whittlesea at the memorial service, did they put in the paper Chaplain Peter Whitefield? No, Bikey Peter Whitefield. And that's great with what's been happening in the press in the last 2 weeks with bikers. Yep. That's what I want to be known for. But would they put Chaplain? No, because probably at the end of the day, people, well, Chaplain, boring, Bikey, ooh, that's different. When Jesus saw the vast crowds, I'm reading from the Phillips because I like it and I couldn't find my other Bible. When Jesus saw the vast crowds, he went up to the hillside after he'd sat down with his disciples and came to him. He began teaching them by saying, "How happy are those who know their need for God, for the kingdom of God is theirs." That's better than a $950 payout, isn't it? The kingdom of God, think about that. "How happy are those who need God, know their need for God, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. How happy are those who know what sorrow means, for they will be given courage and comfort." So that's what I mean. I don't think God really cares whether they're happy all the time. I think happiness is overrated, to be honest. Because it changes. Happy today, sad tomorrow, happy the next day, sad the next, sad, happy. No, contentment. In other words, if you're being persecuted, you've been given a hard time, enjoy it. They did the same to Jesus. They did the same to the prophets. Why wouldn't they do it to you? "Happy are those who claim nothing, for the whole earth will belong to them." Is that different? Is that different to the world we live in, which tells us if we just go out and get what we really want, then we really have everything? That is so counterculture. That's amazing. Difficult, but amazing. "Happy are those who are hungry and thirsty for true righteousness or true goodness, for they will be satisfied. Happy are the merciful, for they will have mercy shown to them." You know, I don't like Pauline Hanson as a politician. To be honest, I don't like some of her policies. But what the paper did to her the other day was just atrocious. Absolutely atrocious. I couldn't care if she'd been a murderer. To do that sort of thing to someone is just atrocious. And we buy the paper. We're weirdos. Really. And I just hope that she gets some, not payback, but I hope people that know her are showing mercy to her. Even though I don't like a policy, she's a human being. She's made in God's image like the rest of us. "Happy are they that are utterly sincere, for they will see God. Happy are those who make peace, for they will be known as the sons of God. Happy are those who have suffered persecution." Oh dear. Happy. That's weird, isn't it? Happy about being persecuted. Diedrich Bonhoeffer, I can't imagine, was too happy when he was persecuted. But if you've read any of his books, you see what I'm reading, struggling my way through for the second year, reading The Cost of Discipleship. And it feels like I've been battered about every time I read it. It's not for the faint-hearted. It's a great book, but I'm just slowly working my way through it because it just beats me about the head. And this is a man that was hung by the Nazis. Accordingly, they used piano wire. Do you think he was happy? I'm sure he wasn't, but I'm sure he was content. "Happy are those who have suffered persecution for the cause of goodness, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs." Notice it doesn't say for the cause of being stupid. We as Christians sometimes can be really stupid and say stupid things. And I have to say, a friend of mine had to remove 3 chaplains that were working in the fires because they went around talking about that stuff, that this was judgment from God because we decriminalised abortion. And he said if he hadn't have sacked them, the fireys would have hosed them down. We can be stupid and say stupid things, but if we're persecuted for doing good, apparently we're supposed to be happy. I have trouble with that. "And what happiness will be yours when people blame you and ill-treat you?" I don't like this book. It's not making me feel good. "When they treat you well and say slanderous things against you for my sake. Be glad." Yes, be tremendously glad. I didn't think it was the Amplified version. Sounds like the Amplified version all of a sudden. It's telling me how glad to be. For your reward is in heaven, and it's magnificent. They persecuted the prophets before you, and if you've read the prophets, I did the prophets in the Old Testament last year and had to write up an assignment. And it was fantastic. Anyone that wants to jump on down and say, I'm a prophet, be careful. Watch out. They persecuted the prophets before you in exactly the same way. You are the earth's salt. But the salt should become tasteless. What can make it salt again? It is completely useless and can only be thrown outside and stamped underfoot. You are the world's light. It is impossible to hide a town built on the top of a hill. Men do not light a lamp to put under a bucket. They put it on a lampstand and it gives light to everybody in a house. Let your light shine like that in the sight of men. Let them see the good things you do and praise God who is in heaven. See, we don't even do it for self-satisfaction, but that has this weird thing, you know, when you're working with someone and you might just say something to them and you see the lights come on and their eyes open up and it's like, wow. You do, you feel good, but that's not why you do it. That's not why I do it. I feel good. I sit and have a steak if I want to feel good, or watch some comedy or listen to some good music. We'll go and have a good cup of coffee. And we're all called to be the same, whether a chaplain at Berwick Secondary College, whether you're a plumber, whether you're an electrician, whether you're a stay-at-home mum or a stay-at-home dad, whatever you do, whether you're retired. What I do is no greater than what you do. I'm chaplain at school and I consider it a real privilege. I don't know what I'll do next, but that's where I am for the moment. One of the things I always remember, and I think we need to remind of each other, when we're working with people and we're dealing with people, we're holding sometimes very fragile people in our hands. And we have a huge, huge responsibility. I'm working with a boy at the moment who's at risk of being kicked out of school, and I don't think it's the best option, but I understand why it's happening. And I'm at a loss as to what to do. So if I could be asking you to pray for me this coming week, he's only been at the school 4 weeks, and I think he's already been suspended for six or eight days. And I'll just say his name's Michael, it's not his real name. He lives with his mum and stepdad. He has a real dad who teaches him that what you do is, son, you stand up to people, and if they give you a hard time, then you repay them in kind. I want to try him to see to do things differently. Because if he's always done what he's always done, he'll always get what he's always got. And nothing will change. And the reality is that coming to faith changes us. And if it doesn't change us, then I don't think we've come to faith. I'm not saying we change overnight. I think our brother said before, you know, that when we come to conversion, the stuff's there for us to use, and we then have to learn how to use it. I've been a Christian since the age of 8, and I just turned 49 the other day. Have I always been the person I should have been? I'd like to tell you yes. If my parents ring me and say, look, we're having trouble with our 16-year-old son, can you help? I go, well, look, I'll give you my son's phone number and my wife's phone number. You call them, and if you still want to speak to me, I'm yours. And I say that jokingly, but I'm also seriously, because I could paint the picture that I'm the most wonderful person in the world. They'll paint another picture of what I'm really like. And I'm not that bad, don't get me wrong. I just want to close my ramblings this morning. I just want to encourage you that I hate coming away to places and pretending that what I do as chaplain is any more important than what any of you do, whatever it is you do. Whether you're unemployed and you might be looking for a job, I'm no better, no different. We all struggle in this life together. And if we're people of faith, then we struggle doubly, because the old man keeps wanting to pull us back into the way that we used to live. I also did an assignment on that last year at Bible College, and that knocked me about. That really knocked me about. Because I'm good at making excuses of why I do what I do, when there's really no excuses. Michael Lunick is a man who I wish I had his talent, both for drawing and for writing. And we use his books and his prayers a lot at funerals and weddings and stuff as well. And I just want to read you this as a prayer this morning as I finish, and then whatever happens next happens. Dear God, we pray for another way of being, another way of knowing. Across the difficult terrain of our existence, we have attempted to build a highway, and in doing so, we have lost our footpath. God, lead us to our footpath. Lead us to where there is in simplicity, we may move at the speed of natural creatures and feel the earth's love beneath our feet. Lead us there where we step by step, we may feel the movement of creation in our hearts. And lead us there where side by side, we may feel the embrace of the common soul. Nothing can be loved at speed. God, lead us to the slow path, to the joyous insights of the pilgrim, another way of knowing, another way of being. Amen.